Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, we're a little late this morning. You're tuned into Blog Talk Radio, Marketing Pulpit International, New York edition with yours truly, Dennis D. Shipman. I come to you with a heavy heart this morning because we've, for whatever reason, decided to elect a racist bigot, and I know that's oxymoron, devil intender, as president-elect of the United States of America. And a large part of the problem, and this is what I've been saying for a number of years, is that we are our own worst enemy. 25.9% of Trump supporters turned out and voted for him. Hillary Clinton got slightly larger margin of her supporters. But the notable absence was in black working class males, roughly the same group except for their color as the white working class that turned out in droves for Trump. And a lot of the pundits are spinning it. They're saying a lot of it has to do with sexism, that they just didn't want to see a woman in the White House. And that's all well and good. You know, we have... I have a lot that I could complain about. I also have a lot that I could feel good about. And I typically look at the glass as half empty rather than half full. In other words, my perspective is usually not rosy and sunny, but not overcast or cloudy all the time. I take a more optimistic view of what's going to happen. So sexism and racism, the isms, I talk about this a lot, excuse me, in a book that I'm writing, Do or Die, and I don't think that those isms have any place in the body politic of these United States any longer, and if, I don't know for a fact, we have some empirical data. I don't know if that was the whole reason that a lot of these black guys came out and voted for Trump or not. It wasn't a significant or a statistically significant number. So I don't want to dump on all the brothers, you know, because I am one and I'm raising one. But I'm pretty annoyed, angry even, because 42% of the vote didn't turn out. That represents 100 million people. Now, granted, I don't know how those people would have voted. I don't know if they would have voted for Clinton or Trump. The fact that they stayed home means that they didn't find either candidate palatable. Now, everyone says that Bernie Sanders warned the Democratic National Committee about this, but I talked some shows back, weeks ago, about the fact that when an organization becomes so large, it becomes as corrupt as the organization that it was designed to antagonize. In other words, in big business, you have in some big business, not all, certainly not in Trump's businesses, you have unions and unionized environment. And the unions act or are supposed to act as a bulwark against excesses of management. Oftentimes, you see the unions are simply an extension of management. I've seen it. I've been victim of it. And where the union did not come to my defense, aid, did not write back, did not answer any calls, nothing. Literally, fortunately for me, I was not in a position where I was, I was harmed. Substantively, by their corruption. But this is what we see with the Democratic National Committee. Now, granted, I don't know that Bernie Sanders could have gotten elected. I really don't. The odds are that he probably could not have been elected because he was a socialist and surely... I didn't underestimate Trump. I didn't for a second. You know why? Because I've been around for a while in this world, and I know how this country works. You know, what racism and things like that. And then you have the Negro apologists that come out of the woodwork, Oprah Winfrey among them, who always, you know, are counseling us to join together and be fair. These people have no sense of fairness. They never will, never have, and never will. And I think it's a fool's errand for someone in a position of privilege. Oprah Winfrey's a billionaire. She has about as much, if not more, money than Trump. And for her to come out and tell everyone, oh, well, now I think that Trump respects President Obama, you know, we ought to just, you know, like simmer down. She didn't exactly say that, obviously. I'm paraphrasing. And I wasn't really prepared this morning. I have to apologize to my listening audience. This is going to be a really off-the-cuff show because I had an accident. I had to drop my child off at school, and some little Spanish girl decided that she wanted to race me and decided to sideswipe my Lexus. And I'm very much annoyed about that because now I have to go over to the Lexus dealership after I call Geico and explain, because you know she's going to lie. Oh, no, he tried to be, you know, but pictures don't lie, and I have plenty of pictures, so I'm not really concerned. So we're gonna square it away. But, you know, it's in the spirit of incivility that this incident took place. And, you know, I'm not shook up at all. I just couldn't believe that she was going to be that aggressive and then sit up and try to lie about it. Which is fine, you know, that's how people do, you know, and this is the problem that we have with Trump presidency. Here's a guy that lies incessantly and refuses to take any responsibility for his conduct. Here's a 70-year-old guy that got elected by virtue of the fact that he appealed to every base instinct in his supporters, the racism, homophobia, misogyny, and you see incident after incident. And then he has the gall, the unmitigated gall, to go on 60 Minutes last night and try to downplay the increased incidents of racially tinged, and some of it racially motivated. I mean, you know, I'm saying tinged. I'm trying to be nice, but I'm not putting a nice face on it. And I'm calling out on my show and on my television show, my podcast, all these black apologists. I'm sick of them. Donna Brazile, you know, she can go and suck on a lemon because she deserved getting terminated from CNN, because she's another one. They get in position of authority, these people, and they do absolutely nothing for the African-American community and then sit up and pontificate about how, you know, we ought to pull together and do this, that. You know, it's just, it's sound bites. That's all it is. It's they have no core beliefs except to line their own pocket. Armstrong Williams is another one, except he's on the right. So you have right wing, left wing, and they're all part of the same rotten buzzard, a rotten bird, you know. So if I sound angry this morning, I am, because there is no way in the world. We're the laughingstock of the world for electing this imbecile to president of the United States. And then you have these clowns getting on the air. You know, what Carl Nelson doesn't tolerate, and certainly I wouldn't on my show or any of my shows, you know, but they get on, you know, bigger platform, Sharpton show, and talk about what Trump's going to do in slogans. I mean, first of all, you don't govern by slogans. You govern by having policy positions. And this man hasn't put down a single policy that he's going to enact. And the ones that he has talked about, articulated, are unworkable. And the one thing, I don't agree with Al Sharpton very much. I think he's a snitch. I know him personally. I remember him from back in the day. And he's another one that has gotten into a position of power by crawling on the backs of those that helped him out of some very thorny situations And I'm not going to go into detail about that because this is an Al Sharpton show. This is Marketing Pulpit International with yours truly, Dennis D. Shipman. But, you know, I do agree that in 90 days when Trump doesn't show and prove, you know, I give him around March. These people are going to turn on him. They are going to turn on him, just like with the wall. First it was a wall, then Judy Woodruff, I believe it was. No, it wasn't Judy Woodruff. I can't think of the woman's name that interviewed Sharpton for 60 Minutes, the 60 Minute piece last night, that aired last night. But she said some in Congress are talking about a fence. Yeah, I could go with a fence. This guy has no core whatsoever. And you know what it is? And this is the thing that annoys me because I say it and I say it and I say it. Now I'm going to start saying it publicly. You know, in this country, as long as you're a white person, you want to be aligned with white interests, even if they are antithetical. Listen to me now, folks. Even if those interests are antithetical to yours, there's no way in the world that a white working class folk are going to benefit from a Trump presidency. That's a fact. There is no way. But see, they don't care about benefiting personally. I don't want to say that they don't care about benefiting personally. How do I want to phrase this? Because I want to remain angry, but I want the anger to fuel my creative my muse. My creativity. I think what you know, like the Republican Party, and I've said this and I've written about it ad nauseum. They know that the Republican Party does not. They abandoned the Democrats. One, a lot of them, the racist ones. And I'm not saying that all Trump supporters are racist, but a great deal of them are, and were, and remain. They didn't want to be a part of a diverse coalition of progressives. And I didn't agree with all the Democratic platforms. I did not. And I don't need to sit here and define which ones I didn't agree with. But I didn't agree with a lot of the platforms. I thought that Obama went out on a limb for a lot of foolishness when he should have been more concerned with black interests. And I know that, you know, President Obama was president for everyone. Now, I don't disagree with that. But there are ways, people, when you're in positions of authority, they do it all the time. I see it all the time. This is why I literally pull my hair out when I see these Negroes in positions of authority talking about they want to be fair. You know, these judges and academicians and lawyers, you know, persons that are politicians and even some athletes, you know, entertainers, and they want to be fair. We, you know, all of a sudden we have this sense of fairness. That these people don't care anything about fairness. They do not. They don't care. And when will we get that as black people? You know, all this foolishness about, no, I want to be ethical, I want to be, man, there is no ethical. T.D. Jakes said that years ago. He said, once you become saved and born again, you are ill-equipped to deal with this world. You can't deal with it because every day, you know, and people can sit up and lie, oh, I'm not ethical, everything I do is ethical. You're a liar. You are a liar if you say that everything that you do every day is ethical, above board, not anymore. That is a lie. Just like this girl that ran into me today, she is not going to want to take responsibility for what she did. She was being aggressive and hit my car. And she is going to sit up and try to lie to her insurance company about what I did. But pictures don't lie. And they can see where she clearly sideswiped the front end of my car aggressively trying to get around me from a double lane narrowing into a single lane, and I'm driving at my normal rate of speed, and I did not budge, and she struck me. And when the officer said, hey, when y'all collide, no, we didn't collide anything. she was being aggressive, and she hit me. So the point that I'm trying to make is that every day, every single day, we compromise in some manner, form, or fashion. We compromise our faith. We compromise our principles. I've seen it time and time and time and time again. And see, the one thing that I have to give white folks is they don't make a big deal about it. You know, they'll lie and say, yeah, we're ethical. Everything we do is ethical, and you know, but we all know that's a lie. But you get these black folks in positions of influence and authority. And I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous, man, because that's why we are, as a people, where we are in this country, where you have pockets of affluence, pockets of success, and you have huge swaths of poverty and deprivation. And we know the criminal justice. Just like in Baltimore's a case in point. I mean, they have a judge there who just let all these cops off the hook, and Marilyn Mosby's office down there finally said, we're not even going to bother to bring, you know, in the Freddie Gray case that we made a big issue about. And they finally said, we're not going to do it again. A bastion of corruption down there. Just the whole judiciary, the whole system, just like Trump said, is broken. Trump is not the one to fix it, though, because Trump is not part of the solution. He is actually part of the problem, because anytime you could run a campaign that's filled with hate, maligning entire groups of people, all African Americans are poor, their cities are hellholes, you know, as if that's our reality. Every single black person in the United States, our reality is that we're poor, broke, and we live in a hellhole, and we can't go to the store for fear of being shot. It's just a brazen lie that appeal to some racist elements in his supporters, and that's what it was. And now the great fear, everybody's talking about fear, and you know we've been dealing with also the threat that he promised on the campaign trail, deporting. 11 million people. It can't be done logistically. It just simply cannot. We'd have to posse comitatus. I mean, we'd have to enact, you know, a martial law, literally, and let the army come in. I mean, there's just literally no way of doing it. I mean, you know, because you don't know, even if you found all these people that were illegal. And there's mayors and governors that are already talking about they're not gonna follow. Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a lot of civil unrest. And I've been talking about this for a while, and I'm just bouncing all over the place. Because I just can't for the life of me figure out what in the heck. I'm not talking about white folks. I know what they were gonna do. You know, those white women that claimed that they weren't going to vote for Trump because all these allegations of sexual abuse, man, that's a lie, you know. And this is what I'm saying about compromising. This is what white people do. And, you know, people, we have better wake up in this country. You know, everybody wants, just like, and one thing, again, I don't agree with everything that Sharpness is, but one thing that I do agree with, it's all this petty bickering, and I got mine, you get yours, and I ain't helping you, and what are you going to do for me? And always got your hands stuck out trying to dig in my pocket, but you ain't doing nothing for me. You know, I have vendors that have never done a thing for me, nothing, extra. Don't do extra. They haven't even done what they were supposed to do that I was paying them for, and then set up and try to act as though I'm an imbecile. I don't know what best practices for X, Y, and Z. I don't know how this is supposed to function or that's supposed to function because that's not my area of expertise. As if I'm a moron, I'm ill-informed, I'm incompetent, and I don't know how to do basic research to determine how something is supposed to work. No, I'm an idiot. You're supposed to do this and pay you more money. So I give a vendor $1,000. He doesn't do what he's supposed to do. And then when I lose sales as a direct consequence of his ineptitude, then I get email, a call, or whatever, with him telling me, oh, well, you were supposed to spend more money with me and I would have straightened you out. I just gave you $1,000. Now, what's wrong with that picture? So this is what we're confronted with in this country where, you know, up is down and down is up, inside is out and outside is in. I mean, you know, we're really living in a, they talk about the alt-right, which is just another euphemism for white supremacy, white nationalism. But we're confronted with a situation where all these Negroes that think they're comfortable now, oh, I got mine, you get yours. Man, we all going to be in the same boat with a Trump presidency because everybody said on there, not everybody, I don't want to say everybody, but enough of us did. I don't know what demographic, we're still getting the data in. I don't know what the demographic is yet, but I do know that when you have 42% of the electorate sit out the most important election in our lifetime, this is the most important election in my lifetime. For my son, that represented 100 million votes. I don't care whether you didn't like Hillary Clinton. I could give less than, I mean, it is just incomprehensible that we would elect this moron who is, the only thing he's not bringing into the White House with him is a hood and a cape. It's just absolutely outrageous. And the same Negroes that sat on their hands, that sat on their asses on Tuesday, November 8th, are going to be the same one griping when he turns the Supreme Court and installs all these conservative legal hacks in the judiciary, and you'll never, you don't get any fair play now. But you're talking about you don't get any fair play now. Let him in that. He's going to turn back everything. I mean, literally everything. And we haven't even begun to talk about the. I just don't have enough time in 30 minutes. But if he appoints Rudolph, I doubt if he'll get confirmed. But I don't. You know, now I don't even know any longer. I don't know what's possible and what's not possible any longer. I just do not. Giuliani was reviled in New York. The white people, the white ethnics loved him because in their narrow minds, he put the niggas in their place. That's a fact. So they loved him. But I can tell you here in New York, we hated Giuliani. He was a bully, much like Trump. I mean, they're two peas in the same pod. I mean, literally. That's why they get along fabulously. But the problem with a Giuliani Justice Department is that he could stop all the civil rights investigations. Not that they're happening anyway under Loretta Lynch. She's weakling, you know, because she's part of the white establishment. So, you know, Negroes know their place. You know, she's trained. So she knows her place. She knows that she can only rock the boat but so far. And that's why when she was compromised by Bill Clinton getting on her airplane when they went Phoenix, I don't even know what they were doing in Arizona, when they went to Arizona some months back during the election, she stepped out of it. And Comey was able to do what he did, which I believe skewed the election. I honestly do, because Hillary Clinton had momentum. And the one thing about momentum is this, is all based on science. It's physics. You know, an object in motion will typically remain in motion unless it comes up against another object of equal or greater size that stops it. And that was Comey. Comey was the object of greater or equal size that stopped it. And this is what we were confronted with. He stopped the momentum, and there's no one that could say, you know, all these apologists coming out of the woodwork, oh, he was in a different, no, he wasn't. No, he wasn't. He had precedent to follow. And the precedent was that the FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigation, a component, a sub-agency of the U.S. Department of Justice, not the converse, does not comment, excuse me, on active investigations. That's a fact. So there was nothing unique in the Clinton investigation. And certainly when you, and that's why Obama, to his credit, I was surprised because he rarely does it, you know, said, hey, man, he castigated him. He said, hey, you know, we don't deal in speculation. So it was a backhanded slap. You know, that's how they play. They play nice. You know, Trump didn't play nice. And we can't, I mean, this is just bizarre beyond belief, folks. I mean, do we honestly believe at this point that here's a man that got in, railing against illegal immigration, against African Americans, scapegoating virtually everyone that is not white male and Protestant. Scapegoat even white women, but they still were stupid enough to come out and vote for him. And, you know, because they vote their interests. They're not their interests. They're aspirational voters. So they, it's not that they vote their interests. It's that they want to be seen as card-carrying white folks, you know, unlike us. We have opinions. You know, I hear Negroes talking this crap all the time. Oh, I have my opinion. Where'd you get your opinion from? How did you form that opinion? Is it formed from fact or just a bunch of ill-informed Negroes sitting around talking about what they believe? Well, what you believe should not impact me. And if you're sitting around in a barbershop, I mean, that is, you know, I could go on and on and on, but I'm just, this is something that I've never seen in my lifetime. I've seen racism, obviously, but for us to actually normalize it is a shame. We'll be back next week, and we're going to talk more about this. We're going to be staying on this topic for a while. And, you know, we have a new show, and I'm going to information on the show next week. So stay tuned and try to have a good week.